Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are Ace Up Science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about GHB. If you don't know about this, it's a relatively new drug used in party circles, particularly popular in the gay community, but it is also the date rape drug. So trigger warning about today, we're going to be talking about, you know, drug use, but also be relating it to sexual abuse and also to why people are choosing to even do this drug in the first place. V fascinating. It's so fascinating. I could not stop reading about.
I feel like such a prude reading about these things. I'm like, I literally don't know anything about this.
I think it's kind of okay.
Am I sheltered?
No.
When you suggested it, I was actually like, what is that? I don't know.
Well,
I recognize the letters. Like, I know the alphabet. But
well, people say like gay. Like, I am generalizing here, but in a lot of the research, it's very popular with specifically gay men.
Yeah.
And so I was just going to be like, a lot of gay men, I know, they call it G. Just pure on G.
Interesting.
We'll get to that. It's really interesting because definitely when we do research about drugs, or I do like psychedelics and like MDMA, and they're like, we use them for therapies, and there's all these like interesting like shifts in our ways. This one is not
happening. Spoiler.
What? Why?
Oh, just for like the section about GHB.
No, I'm saying this does not have that. This has like no, there's not one part of reading this that makes me interested in doing.
Exactly. I'm saying that's a spoiler.
But I think I think it's still interesting for people to know, because I think a lot of the time it is kind of like, as you read about like shrooms and stuff, you start to be like, wait, interesting.
Yeah,
that is using new neurons. Like, this one doesn't have any like good stuff.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Is that a spoiler where people like expecting us to be like, okay, G is sick.
You never know. If lots of people are using it, there's lots of gay people that listen to this podcast. They might be curious, like, what are they good? Like, lots of drugs, are studied in a way that is like, can they be useful?
Oh,
let's
wow.
save it. Let's save it for okay, that okay, part okay. of the okay. section of the Ooh. Pod, Greg. Okay, you're jumping ahead. Well, actually, we don't know what the fuck we're talking about now. Like, we have nothing to talk about. We are recording 3 podcasts this week, right?
What?
Like, we already recorded one.
Oh.
Because we're going away, and now we're recording 2, and I'm just like, they're all in my birthday follow-up week, and I have been a mess. So now you know when you listen to next week's 2, I'm still living out my 34-year-old body disassembling right in front of my very own eyes.
Wow, I was like, it's still your birthday week? Didn't know that, but I guess so.
Well, interesting you didn't know that. It's because you should be the one to be pampering me all week.
Yeah, shit, sorry. No, I am just walking around like, wow, he's deteriorating. He's really, really telling me he's deteriorating.
I had a really rough week.
Yeah, no, I know. And you keep being like, it's 34. I'm like, yeah, maybe it is.
I honestly don't know, but hopefully it's not that. I think I'm coming around. I'm finally feeling... I feel like the weather has been so annoying and crazy, and it's like literally was 16 degrees Celsius the other day, but the day before that it was like minus 10.
Yeah.
And then today it's again cold after being warm and it's snowing. So I just don't know if it's like,
it's like God does exist, because I did not get a migraine.
And Ernie's vet just said it's allergy season for dogs, so maybe I'm getting weird allergy things.
Because we all know you are part dog, animorph. Yes. If you were to animorph, you'd definitely become like a terrier.
I don't know if I'd be a dog. Everyone says I look like a turtle.
But you don't have a lethargic, slow energy, do you?
But I need a lot of time to process.
Oh, yeah, you are.
That's not a turtle. I don't know what it is.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, is it allergy season for turtles?
I should look into that.
I doubt it.
I also am a Ram because I'm an Aries. Do we believe in that? Obviously not, but everyone can have a little fun sometimes.
Yeah, I'm a scale. Wait, I'm a metal scale.
Do you ever like lean into those things?
I mean, when I was growing up and we'd always get the newspaper, as a gay, I'd throw away like world news, sports, and go right to arts and be like, ooh, interesting. And in arts, there would be the horoscope and I'd read it and be like, yeah, I am like feeling good.
I am having a great day.
But that was like, I was literally 12 and I haven't really ever looked into it since, but I think it would be fun. It's just, I'm actually just not that interested in it.
I feel like there's a parallel universe of me who's like a full ass yogi who does like all these readings and like uses those cards. What are they, like tarot cards? Like,
yeah.
I have seen the glimmer in my eye when I engage with those things. Like, I love it. But then there's just the science part of me that's like, but I know it's not real. But like, I find it, I love the idea of ghosts and aliens and like all these kind of supernatural things compel me. Even though I'm like, I don't like necessarily believe it's real. But so I found a middle ground now where I feel like it's interesting. It can be fun. It can make you think about things. It's a good question prompter. It makes you evaluate your own life. And that's how I see it now. That's my interest in it. I don't want to like poo-poo on it.
I hate when you say
poo-poo. Poo-poo.
I hate it. Well, I'm writing it down as an episode because I think it would be interesting to talk about more deeply.
Did we do an episode?
We never
astrology?
Did one on Side Note, but we've done lots of videos on Aesop Science.
What about when Natalie came on?
No, we were talking about dicks.
Oh, that was about dicks.
It was literally about
very
penises.
Similar. Oh, she loves astrology.
Yeah, she loves.
Okay, astrology. We should fully do an astrology episode for sure.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, I think it's,
I feel
fun
like half of our podcast is just talking about other episodes we should do.
Well, that's good. Like, hopefully, well, this one, no, GHB didn't come out of it, but our next one, Lip Chap, did out of a thing from our head.
Oh, true. Okay, shall we do a little? What did you learn this week?
Yeah.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
So I learned about sneezing. Okay, everyone was sneezing on the gosh darn subway the other day and like
terrifying.
We're in the
a pandemic.
Yeah, we're in Toronto though, where everything's been lifted. You don't have to wear a mask.
On the TTC you have to wear a mask.
Yeah, but people don't. Like, it's
gross.
Okay, well, we don't have to like fully shame, but
no,
like,
if that's the rule, that's the rule.
Okay, yeah, no, he is a rule follower. Is that part of a Ram?
It's totally fine,
astrology?
Not in other places, but if that is the rule of the TTC, it's like respect the workers, respect everyone else's personal space.
Yes, okay, but in, you're right, obviously,
wow,
I'm wearing
anti-mask
a mask
over here.
No, I'm wearing a mask. I'm just saying it's a confusing time where we're being told in Toronto, take your masks off. You are supposed to wear them on the TTC, but I have noticed it has impacted. People aren't leaving the house with the same anxiety.
Sure. And people probably just don't even know that. I'm sure there are a lot of people who don't realize on the TTC you're supposed to still wear it.
But I also think it's like actually whatever. It's like it's confusing. It's like, oh, take your masks off in this city, but you have to leave it on for the TTC. Like it is. I'm just like empathizing with like people trying their best and it is confusing.
Okay.
But people were sneezing a lot and I was kind of like, oh, freaking out. Then I was like, what? Why? Like, why is sneezing relating to my fear of COVID? And then I realized it's an act meant to get rid of pathogens and irritants in your airwave.
I love how that just struck you. You're
well,
like,
no, it didn't even
why
spark.
On earth am I disgusted by that person sneeze slapping my face?
Well, no, it wasn't. It didn't. The answer didn't strike me. I was literally like, why is that? And then I like I had to research that. Like, I didn't even think. I was like, that's weird. And so then they've actually figured out recently exactly how your body does it. And essentially, like within your nose, there's specific signaling molecules called neuromedin B, and those ones, like when affected by an irritant or a pathogen, will release a specific sensory signal that will go to a neuron that goes to a part of your brain that is a similar region that has to do with exhalation. And then like almost like unconsciously, you link it to a type of exhalation called a sneeze, and then you sneeze. And they like figured it out by just studying mice's brains, giving them capsaicin, like the spicy molecule from like chili peppers, making them inhale it and sneeze, and like going through their brain and figuring it out. And then they realize it's like your body. I just think it's kind of cool that your body is like, you're just sitting there, and without even thinking about it, a specific irritant or potentially virus is hitting a part of your nose where a certain signal then goes to a part of your brain that has to do with exhalation, and all of a sudden you're like forcefully exhaling in a weird way to get it out.
And
it's
cool. A sneeze really is one of the closest things to an orgasm.
Wait, is that true?
I just mean,
wait, what? I'm like looking through the study, like, I don't see that.
I meant,
here goes his astrology vibes.
So if you look at the moon, no, I mean, like, anecdotally, obviously, I'm not like tying them biologically. I just mean a sneeze feels so good. It's kind of like when you pee and you're like, that felt so good too.
That's so funny. I'm like, I don't feel good because every time I sneeze now, I'm like, sorry, yeah. Like everyone here thinks I have COVID.
Yeah, in public, a sneeze is mortifying.
But I'm like, an orgasm.
Well, I just find like when you sneeze, it's such a nice relief. Yeah, obviously, there's time.
Before COVID, you're right.
And if you're really sick with a cold, a sneeze can be hell because you do it so much that it actually starts to hurt.
Yeah.
But if you just have like a singular sneeze that you're, you know, when you're just like waiting for it to come out, and you're like, I'm going to sneeze. I can feel it, but it's not quite there.
And you're in the safety of your own home alone. It's real good.
Yeah. Like, and just feels like, I don't know. I don't know why sneezing feels so good. Obviously, it's because your body's like, well, I want you to like this because it's a very intense reaction to something that if it's not pleasurable, you're probably not going to do.
I'm trying to get there with this orgasm thing. I'm like, I guess.
Really?
But yeah, no, I've always feel like I felt insecure about them. So there's always been like this like tension between the release not being like acceptable. Whereas when I have an orgasm, I'm accepting the release.
Oh, I now with the pandemic do feel kind of rude because I used to, there was a time in my life when I just decided, you know what? Don't hold in a sneeze. It's bad for you. And I would also add, I literally would add, like, if you've ever seen Star Wars, you know that, like, I forget his name now, but Bossa Nova, no, I forget his name. I'm really embarrassed. You're but Jar Jar Binks is like king. And he goes like, you know that guy? Episode one, Phantom Menace. Yeah,
Jar Jar Binks is what, brother?
His like, king or whatever, like the guy who runs the
and has like the weird I can picture
so
that.
I would always sneeze and go like now I'm like, that's absolutely disgusting. I was probably spreading my spittle everywhere, but I thought it was cute.
I don't like have any memories of you doing that. Like I'm like, that's so many. I'm like, thank God. Like I'm just picturing you like being like me being like, what the gosh dang hell. But I like, to each their own, Jar Jar Binks.
Okay, I need to figure out his name. Ruger Nass. I didn't know that. Boss Nass. Okay, that's what I was trying to remember. Boss Nass.
That seems like an uncreative name.
Anyway, should I go into mine?
Yeah.
Enough about sneezing. But mine is actually about something called, well, scientists have invented, this blew my mind. It was so cool. And it's unfortunate I can't show you the video, but I want to make a video about this. They've invented a magnetic turd that could help human digestion. That's just a funny way of saying it. It's basically slime mold created by magnetism that can like encircle objects. It is self-healing. It can squeeze through narrow spaces. People have been online and been comparing it to flubber. There's videos of it like navigating a maze. So it's basically this slime that they can control like a robot. And hypothetically, like this haven't been done yet, but the idea is, can we use something like this to go into the human body and achieve, like in this case, they were saying, can we remove like an accidentally swallowed little battery in like a kid or something like that? That was the weird example.
Oh, it's not like constipation, like get thy shite out of thy body. It's like, oh no, that kid swallowed a pen cap.
I guess like it's obviously not theoretical, like the slime mold is real and is movable, but it has not been put in anyone. And I think it's just sort of a prototype to show like this thing can squeeze through small spaces. Maybe instead of sending metal robots into people, we can actually use like this slimy thing that is not going to risk hurting people. Right now, the magnetic substance is potentially toxic to humans, so they're like still working on that part. Given that the battery might also be toxic, yeah. They're like, yeah, but the slime mold is still actually toxic. And there are no immediate plans for testing it in humans. But it's kind of, I wish I could show the video on the podcast. It's kind of like a mix of a solid and a liquid, they say, kind of like cornstarch and water. Like at certain times it can get really hard and surround something, but then it can like get
kind of
really
like
soft.
A turd,
kind of like a turd,
depending on your hydration level.
Exactly.
I love that. A magnetic turd that could save your life.
Yeah,
that's cool. Really cool.
That's literally, I want to make a video called the magnetic turd that can save your life.
I was literally just was thinking that, like, that's such a good way of putting
just
it.
Like a piece of poo as the thumbnail.
But I think that
I think that won't work.
No, I think it will. I love science, and I just love like the PhD students who are like sitting down over a beer and like someone's like, what's your research? And they're like, oh my God. And they're just so passionate. Like, well, you know, we're not there yet due to toxicity levels, but in the future, there is a way we could have a magnetic turd that could push out a battery if a kid swallows it. And they just like such tunnel vision on their research, but everyone's like, cheers. I'm actually studying like ancient Egypt or whatever.
Those are two very different groups.
Yeah, it's when they got all the faculties together to have a beer to try and create intermingling and correlations between faculties.
Let's do it. Moving on to a break. We'll see you in a bit.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. People don't always realize that physical symptoms like headaches, teeth grinding even, which I do, even digestive issues can be indicators of stress. And let's not forget about doom scrolling, sleeping too little, sleeping too much, which actually for me is like now, undereating or overeating. Stress shows up in all kinds of ways, and in a world that's telling you to do more, sleep less, and grind all the time, hustle harder, hustle culture. Here is your reminder to take care of yourself, do less, and maybe try some therapy. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy. Give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress. Side note is sponsored by BetterHelp, and listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/sidenote. That's betterhelp.com/sidenote. Every 5.5 minutes, someone in the U.S. dies of a drug overdose. Each of these deaths is tragic and preventable. There is an effective approach for protecting the health of people who use drugs and avoiding fatal overdoses. The approach is called harm reduction. Harm reduction includes things like access to sterile syringes to stop the spread of HIV and hepatitis C, access to naloxone to prevent fatal overdoses, and connecting people with the vital services and information that they need. Harm reduction doesn't require anyone to stop using drugs to get help. Instead, it provides judgment-free support for people and meets them wherever they are at that day. Please visit supportharmreduction.org to learn more about harm reduction and share your memory of a loved one who you might have lost to an overdose.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time. Study time.
GHB, coming at you from two gay men. You might have heard this before with a gay voice. You got any G? Okay.
What the hell? I think you should give another trigger warning because some people only listen to this part of the
podcast.
Oh. So those of you just tuning in on the video part of this YouTube, you know, we're going to be talking about a drug, which in and of itself can be about addiction, overdose, these kind of things. But also GHB is sometimes known as the date rape drug and can be correlated to sexual assault and all these things.
And so, we're going to have to talk about it, I think,
in some of the research, because that's mainly where it's been really highly studied for reasons that have to do with that.
Yes. So just, you know, it will be interesting. It will be engaging. But for anyone that's, you know, triggering for it, now you know.
Yeah. It is definitely like, I don't know. Doing the research, I was like, this is intense. Like, this is an intense drug.
Yeah. So what I found interesting. So full disclosure, I'm a little prude and didn't know anything about it. But I don't know if that's true.
Like, don't say that you're a prude too. Like, it's okay to
I just feel like I don't know anything about any drugs because I'm so innocent.
Okay. Well, that's not true.
No, it's also because I'm absolutely terrified of dying in any capacity. And so anything that can increase my risk of dying, goodbye.
Yeah.
Except for like alcohol.
I don't think it necessarily means that you're a prude. I think that this is a popular drug amongst circles
that statistically, I'm supposed to be in.
Yeah, of like, gay men. No, but it's of gay, within gay culture, there's also a lot of different types of people, and lots of gay men aren't initiating or understanding or around the drug of GHB. But like a lot of the research has shown that it is men having sex with men who are using this drug as a recreational drug, but it's also used in different like rehabilitations of people with narcolepsy.
Yeah, or that's what I wanted alcoholism. To say. So obviously on the surface, in and of itself, this drug is not, you know, there are probably some people out there, maybe some listening to this podcast, that might use GHB for a condition.
Yes.
To say that I have heard even with those conditions, there are pretty intense like withdrawals or addictions that can come from it. But it can be used in a sensitive way that is prescribed by a doctor.
Yeah, for sure. And it is interesting because even, it's used in intense scenarios because it's an intense drug.
Why don't we just kind of explain, what it is,
the pharmacology of it all.
Because I didn't really know before this. And so
me neither.
Even from a perspective of like what people feel like, what actually happens in your body, what's it doing, all that kind of stuff.
So it's gamma hydroxybutyric acid.
Say that again.
So it's gamma hydroxybutyric acid. It does start with G-A. So it's a precursor to GABA, which is... What?
Every time you say something with a G, so it's a precursor to gay. If you do
it is. If you're doing it, it's a precursor to gay. That's for sure. If you're doing G, it's a precursor to the word gay and gay. It's a precursor to GABA, which is a neurotransmitter we talk about a lot on ASAP Science. So it's kind of funny because it's like when I read that, I was like, okay, precursor to GABA, moving on. But it's like people might be like, what the hell does that mean? But it is a neurotransmitter. And GABA, which is a neurotransmitter, a literal chemical in your nervous system, in your brain, affects...
Is gay.
But it affects GABA receptors, which are like receptors of neurons in your brain that will do specific things in your body. And GABA, you can associate with like more inhibitory responses, whereas like glutamate is more excitatory responses. But that's also confusing because inhibitory... doesn't necessarily mean like always.
People often say like alcohol is a depressant, which it is, but it's that fine line of like it doesn't make you depressed, but depressant in the sense that it can be turning things off. And I think to your point, an inhibitor sometimes can be helping something function.
Yes.
Like in your brain, turning something off can sometimes bring you clarity because now you can focus.
Yes.
In this case, though, it is a system, like a central nervous system depressant. So I think it can make you feel sleepy, slows down your breathing and heart rate. Obviously, the more you take, you risk actually impacting your breathing to a severe level.
And also it's like that is important. It's like you are constantly having inhibitory signals firing in your brain in order to allow your consciousness to function properly. If you were just taking in all the sensory stimulus of your surroundings at all times, you actually you would die. You wouldn't be able to process anything. You would I don't even know how to describe it because I can't even Well, think about like seizures. Like there are things that happen like that you can understand are negative in your body when there's overexcitation or like convulsion. Like you need to, like, that's why GABA isn't like bad just because it's inhibitory.
Yeah. That's like a natural part of the human brain. And body.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like a confusing thing in biology when you're learning about it. Cause it's so hard to not think excitation, like good, exciting, turning on, inhibition, bad, turning off. But GABA, the actual like chemical neurotransmitter in and of itself, is too big to go through the blood-brain barrier. GHB is a precursor to that. So when you're consuming it, you're adding essentially like the molecules to make more GABA. And GHB does occur naturally in your body, but this is a drug where you're just essentially like flooding your body with more of the precursors to create these neurotransmitters. And that's how your brain gets like affected by it.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because similar to like marijuana even, it's something that does exist in your body already.
Yeah, right? Like cannabinoids. So, yeah.
It's interesting that it's playing into a system that exists. Like some other drugs are introducing things into your body and stimulating you almost in new ways. But so it's not in and of itself bad. It's just like the dose is the poison in a lot of cases. And your body has this GABA, but now it's like in excess mm-hmm. when you take this drug.
But what I found the most ominous about this drug was that I just find alcohol to be like, ugh. like when I do think of like psychedelics and the fact that like new parts of your brain are being turned on and like it can like almost mimic what it feels like to be traveling, and like people can have with therapists these really like prolific experiences, and overdosing is very, very hard.
Were you just talking about what? Shrooms?
Psychedelics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like LSD, shrooms. Yeah. Like this is so scary because it mimics alcohol. So it is a depressant. I just assumed because it was a gay party drug that it was going to be causing excitation.
Like
I thought glutamate was going to be in the picture more, but it's like, it's truly shutting things down in the same way alcohol does to give you a feeling of like you're no longer as inhibited.
Yeah. Like a buzz. I think it makes people feel a little more sociable, slightly dizzy, which a lot of drugs do. It's mm-hmm. just that feeling of being in a different state of mind. It's interesting to point out that it's like alcohol though, and to realize yeah. like, you know, a lot of drugs and alcohol specifically is often considered really bad for you.
Yeah,
that is also can do a lot of these things. Like drinking too much alcohol can shut down
yeah.
your breathing.
I know. It kind of felt like the way it's sort of pitched in the gay community is like you go to like a circuit party where they play like horrible music. It's like, and I'm like, oh, well, they're on that drug that makes them like it. But I thought it'd be more than just like an alcohol similar thing.
Well, okay. Yeah, that's fair.
But okay. So it also does like create an emotional connection, which alcohol can do too. Like when you're inhibition is lowered, it can create like these emotional, it essentially makes it easier for you to like connect with someone emotionally because you're maybe not as like anxious about yourself. Yeah. You're not as aware of like, you know,
you're less inhibited.
Your insecurities or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it also can increase your libido. And I do think that that's a part of this mm-hmm. for gay men, is that it's like, it's lowering their inhibition. So now they're having more confidence to maybe hit on someone, talk to someone. It's increasing their libido. So it's yeah, mixed with sex.
You probably want to dance and you feel free. It's that kind of idea, I think, a lot of drugs is just like you don't think about the people around you anymore.
Yeah.
You can just kind of like unwind and feel loose and not have those stressful, anxious feelings anymore. I think what kind of freaked me out about this, though, like which is different than alcohol, is the dosing is so
scary.
Little. So to, I'm just going to, I had written it down because I want to make sure
it's
I'm
like, it's,
right.
It's like the amount you take is 1 to 2 grams to quote unquote get high and have fun. The overdose was like, can start at 3.5 grams.
Yeah, that's what, okay. So it was like the difference between getting high and going under is less than 1 millimeter of liquid version of it.
Ugh.
So obviously alcohol is a way different scenario because people are like drinking potentially liters of like beer or
yeah.
wine or whatever.
And it's regulated.
You're not accidentally yeah. going to like get an extra drop of something.
And okay, so the also big, we really are, I personally just like from my research, I'm getting really into like why I think this drug is like scary, because there also the big issue with a lot of people going to the hospital and having overdoses is because it's so common to be drinking alcohol in a party setting. So you're now ingesting two different substances that are depressants in the similar way to your body. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why so often people are having overdoses where they're shutting down their bodies too much. And that's when people can actually stop breathing, which I find so scary, because your body is now like, essentially you can think about it as like inhibited too much. The depressants are too high in thine brain,
right,
that your body isn't even making you breathe anymore. And that's really scary. And even from a pharmacological perspective in the hospital, it's not as simple as using like naloxone on other overdoses. It's a harder thing to treat once you actually are in a place where there is like medical help, which I also found scary. Like, okay.
I will say though, I mean, obviously there's probably people listening to this, many people in this world that have done it, and I haven't done it, neither of you. And so I think we don't have yeah. like any personal experience.
Like, dude, I'm like, but it is the best. Like, you know what I mean? That's true. Like, I'm like, and I found myself.
I think it opens an interesting conversation around drugs, because yeah. I found a 2006 report commissioned by the UK Parliamentary Committee, and they found that the use of GHB was less dangerous than tobacco and alcohol in physical harm, dependence, and social harms. That may be because it is used so much less frequently as well. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to realize, like, we allow and we totally accept alcohol, tobacco, even cocaine, even marijuana. Like, lots of drugs now become so socially acceptable that, of course, we're balancing out the alcohol as
No, you're right. That's interesting.
And another 2006 study said there's no evidence to suggest... Actually, I'll just say it, like, there's a lot of lore around date rape, and obviously it's used for that and has been, but to a much smaller degree than was once thought.
Okay.
And the media maybe blows it out of proportion.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
It said that it's used in less than 2% of cases of rape involve GHB, whereas 17% involve cocaine.
Yeah, okay, okay, so we're talking about it. But, okay, we need to explain, we need, like, that was a little ahead.
Sorry.
What the date rape drug is under the assumption that the person is also drinking alcohol, is my understanding. Like you're giving it to someone usually, like, okay, in the media, you're so right. Like, we see it often. It's someone putting something in a drink.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it is actually ingested through your mouth. Mm-hmm. It's like, you only need small amounts. Like, you can have liquid doses in milliliters. Yep.
And I think it's odorless.
Odorless. It's like a salt. It's
discreet. Yeah. That, like, it's easy enough to sneak in a drink with someone not realizing, like, there's something tastes really weird in my drink now.
Exactly. And I think that the thing that can happen too is that those people now don't know that they have been given this GHB. So you can probably, they're probably giving them like lower amounts, but then they're also drinking all night.
Yeah.
And then they're taking advantage of it. But it is, I found that, I've read that study too. I thought that was interesting. Like, we've been told that narrative.
Told which? That it is like the date rape.
But then it's like thinking of like comparing this drug to, okay, like tobacco, like we know that all it does is kill you and it's so addictive. Mm-hmm. Alcohol is so addictive and it's so culturally accepted that it's so dangerous. Cocaine is awful. Like, it's a highly addictive drug. So I think it is interesting to know that cocaine is more involved in these sexual abuse cases than GHB. Mm-hmm. And then because I'm like, I do think it is like the media feeling like that GHB is a simple story and a more ominous story.
Yeah, whereas I think like ominous
cocaine
is,
you know, it's a more complex drug that is like more socially accepted and scary, and you can't just have like a plot line built out of it, maybe.
Yeah, it's less, it'd be also way harder to like accidentally do cocaine without knowing it. You know what I mean? And so I think the story around GHB, I mean, like, what is potentially interesting is that it's much harder to know if that happened to you. In that they, like,
oh, yeah,
I think a lot of criminal cases, they've tried, like, in urine testing and stuff. Like, it gets out of your system really fast.
But they can get it in hair, apparently.
Oh, yeah. I read that as well.
They can tell that GHB has been used in someone through their hair, but not through their urine. But I think urine is just a really common way.
A simple way, too, to test and be like, if someone were to go to the authorities and say, I think this happened to me. Obviously, urine for a long time, that's probably how they sampled them. Like, well, we can't know for sure that you were drugged last night. Mm-hmm. And so I think that makes it difficult to know for sure, too. Like, in the case of a rape or an assault, it's maybe easier to identify if someone had taken cocaine in that case versus, like, I don't know.
But also, it's like, it's so intense. Like, in all these situations, like, these drugs are, like, really intense and heighten things. And obviously, the cocaine one is interesting because it isn't as easy to trick someone. Whereas GHB is like that is like definitely
unknowingly giving it to someone.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that in pop culture it's often mixed with drinking because then you're double downing on these same depressants. But I think it can still happen with just GHB. So that's why it's important for people to know, unrelated to assault, if you're taking it yourself, like, you can hit a point of not remembering your night, you know, like the point where your body is so depressed that you are so intoxicated that you can't function anymore, that you can't breathe anymore.
And you get nausea in the similar way to drinking too, apparently.
So I think that's worth knowing that, of course, it can and probably does happen often with someone sneaking it into your alcohol. Mm-hmm. But if you're also intentionally taking it on your own, like, just know that that border of the amount is important to understand.
And I think it is just, I keep thinking about this like party setting, like this stereotype of like a circuit party of like gay men and being like, so much G. It's like, I think when I've been reading about a lot of the toxicology and pharmacology of the overdoses is that people are in these party settings and they're mixing like uppers, like MDMA with GHB, and your body is now having to deal with this like highly depressant substance, which is GHB, and alcohol probably mixed with these other drugs that you might think to yourself, these are party drugs, but they're actually affecting your body in such like different ways that it puts such a strain on your body that the overdose can happen through that way as well. It can't, it, like you might just not be doing alcohol and GHB, which then obviously would create like drowsiness, agitation, depressed breathing, unconsciousness, and death. But now it's like, okay, wait, if you're taking other substances that are like uppers while taking these depressants, that's another way that they've just found in a lot of people's systems, being like your whole central nervous system is so strained that it like it
overwhelmed,
literally like people can be like convulsing while having their lungs shut off. Like it's just,
there can be more than one problem going on.
Because I think that like people might not realize what they're taking is like a depressant, because they're assuming it's going to maybe be an upper. I don't know. I'm hoping people do their research like, before, but
Because the drug space is so, maybe I have this because, and I'm sure you grew up this way too, like we were so reared to be terrified of any drug, right? Like, so we used to have like programs come into our school that would show what happens, how dangerous drugs are, but that included marijuana, right? And that included like a lot of other drugs that now are much more socially acceptable. And don't do that. And so
I remember the cops would come in, the pigs would come in, and they'd be like, this marijuana had like Febreze in it. You know what I mean? They'd try and like tell you that like the marijuana was like laced with Febreze. And I was kind of like at the time, like, oh my God. But then it's like, actually, like, wait, what? Like,
so it makes me sometimes question now when I look at drug culture, because obviously I'm like, I don't do a lot of drugs and I have a lot of fear around like taking something. But I've seen myself transition from being so afraid of something like marijuana and now being like, it's nothing. And knowing there are still other cultures.
It's not nothing.
Okay. It is worth like having that. But I've gone to that, like obviously the cultural conversation in Canada and America and in lots of other places is like, it's certainly not as harmful as alcohol. It can be really bad for you, obviously, especially smoking. And obviously it's impacting your brain. But
and there are withdrawal symptoms too.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it's not problematic. It's just like I've gone from thinking it was the literal devil to being like, oh, okay, I'll do that every weekend.
I guess I never had the literal devil. Like you did. Truly, like Mitch used to
truly believed it was the literal devil.
He would cry.
Stop it.
He literally would cry when I smoked.
Because Greg was an absolute drug addict when we met.
Okay, well, there's the devil thing. I'm like, I don't think I was. It was just like, I don't know, he's crying while I'm like smoking a joint.
But it just makes me sort of question, I don't know, or figuring out that balance. I think now where I'm landing with most drugs, even the things like alcohol that I consume, is like, I know objectively this is not good for me, basically in any capacity. And as an adult, I'm trying to balance the like, how do I get to like let loose and have some fun and do something that's whatever versus mitigating the dangers of that drug. And I'm sure there are people who do, whether it's GHB or other quote unquote hard drugs, who maybe feel that same way where they're like, the question is just whether you truly can have a handle on something like that because of the minor dose differences and the addiction to it. Like, it's so pretty severe.
I didn't realize how like it's severely addictive. And also there is severe withdrawal symptoms too. And the fact that it affects your brain the similar way to alcohol, it's almost like, this isn't really fair, but like it's almost like you're taking a super concentrated way of making yourself feel drunk super, super quickly.
Right.
So with that comes like you do have memory loss. Like it affects your brain in pretty intense ways. And I also think it's interesting because it's so new. Like people only really started doing it recreationally in the 1990s. So there's like,
It's like a club drug, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of like parts of it. But you're right. Like I think honestly with all drugs, it's just what I'm hoping and what I would put in a lot of faith in people is that they're doing this type of scientific research before they do it. But the hard part is I'm like, I have a science degree. I'm obsessed with teaching science. So when I think about drugs, I'm getting this type of detail. Mm-hmm. And what does scare me is the people who are like, oh, it does what? Oh, euphoria? Like, cool. And right. like, but that's like also maybe because I am ignorant to this drug and like, mm-hmm. I've never done it.
Yeah.
But I think it's like, you're right. Like, it's always about research and knowledge. Is like, that's like kind of like a metaphor for everything in life. Like, the more you know, mm-hmm. the more you'll be able to have like potentially a fine relationship yeah, with
like
this
education
drug.
Over abstinence.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
To allow sure. people are going to do it. Mm-hmm. So educating people about like how to do it safely or like reasons why they shouldn't, but like it's better to teach people, I think.
Yeah. Also, just like they were saying, it's such an easy like drug to make chemically, like it's like very simple chemistry that is not being made in illicit labs. It's actually being like,
it's
made
actually in high school labs.
Yeah, like literally. It's actually a grade 11 unit 3 project, but it's being made in like homes mostly. Like, you can actually like make it at home. And it's like one thing that just I think across the board is just the stance I have is that we need to legalize all of these drugs mm-hmm. so we can regulate them.
Right. So people know
and people
exactly
can know
what
exactly.
Taking.
Like, it's yeah. so frustrating to me as humans. Like, sometimes I'm like, I want to eject myself from Earth when I think about like the war on drugs or whatever. Yeah. It's like that was such a failure. Like, cocaine. Like, America. Like, you're the highest consumers of cocaine in the world, and you're pretending that like you're not. Like, if you legalized it, you'd be able to fund money to the people properly who are having to make this and illegally, dangerously make mm-hmm. their lives
like
vulnerable.
An extremely dangerous drug trade.
Exactly. And it's just like, it's like you can look to places like Portugal where you see that it works. It actually decreases, you know, people's death and overdose because there's increased awareness. We're seeing it with marijuana.
And then there can be like studies and stuff around how yeah. to like so many drugs that are deemed, you know, totally illicit and you can't use, like then researchers can't even study them. Yeah. That's why psychedelics for so long were banned. Mm-hmm. And it's like there was so little research, and now people are like, this is kind of the age of psychedelics and mushrooms, and we're learning so much about them because they weren't allowed to even have them in labs for so yeah. long, which is sad.
But yeah, like I think you're just right. Like, it's like this drug is pretty intense, and I think it's caused a lot of like overdoses, which like something like marijuana, it's like a different conversation because mm-hmm. it like kind of can't in the same way. It as
right.
Marijuana is like anti-nauseating, whereas this drug, like a big issue with death is people choking on their own vomit. And like one thing they said is that it's really important if someone is like, whatever the word is, like overdosing, to put them in the recovery position. Like, if you know from like, I just don't know from being a lifeguard, when you like put the arm up, lie them on their side mm-hmm. with one arm up, with their like one leg of their knee that is like higher off the ground,
yeah,
like folded. So essentially their head is like tilted
so
down.
And the leg is what's stopping them from turning back.
Yeah, they're essentially leaning forward. And then therefore when they vomit, you can like scoop it out. And like just being like, it's a depressant. It might be really hard to move the body. Like just put the body in the recovery position and seek medical attention, because the vomiting and the nausea part of it can be really dangerous. That's the same with someone who's too drunk as mm-hmm. well. So it's like those things are worth like knowing if you're out and like in a party setting where a bunch of people are doing this. Cause I think from what I've heard from like friends and anecdotally, like it happens. Like mm-hmm. a lot of people, when I was talking about like doing this episode, were like, I've been somewhere where I've seen someone like
be having a moment yeah, from that.
Yeah. Like truly, I mentioned this to 4 of my friends and they all had a story about being in a setting where they think there was a lot of GHB and that happening. And just so, yeah, like it's just knowing like the like vomiting is a big issue. So mm-hmm. like get medical attention and maybe put them in the recovery position. Because they also said the euphoria can make the people like want, like in their head think they're okay, but they actually can't walk.
They're like struggling.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, like you might be in the better position to understand like what they need than they will because right. of the like way it makes them feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was gonna say a little more on addiction to it. So like it is very quickly physically addictive and can create dependence, I think. Like the advice, because I was on like KMH's website talking about it, and it was just like, avoid using it frequently and don't use it for more than 2 days in a row is what it said.
Whoa.
And I don't know if that, obviously that's not gonna like make you like so addicted right away. I don't actually know, but that was their advice. And what I found, well, what they said is it disrupts the normal balance of brain circuits and control rewards, memory, and cognition, ultimately leading to compulsive drug taking. And when they've done tests of GHB on rats, they will prefer GHB solutions to water. So it is like actually addictive in the sense that like even rats are now choosing it over hydrating themselves.
Yo, properly. The GA what? Landing in that G. And I think the way rat.
The gay rat.
Imagine just like a circa party of rats and they're like, they seem to want to do it the next day.
There's just like pumping beats, although that's as good. And there is really intense withdrawal symptoms, insomnia, anxiety, tremors that usually resolve within 3 to 21 days.
So what I found interesting is like it's rarely used as an like a drug for someone who has alcoholism. But it's interesting because it's like what happens is when you're deciding to not drink alcohol after being an alcoholic, because you've depressed your body for so long, it starts to convulse. There's so much excitation in your brain. You no longer have the normal ability to suppress that. That's why people get the shakes. Mm. It's why people can get delirium tremens and they can get like seizures or have like these like really big issues, essentially like picture like shaking over excitation. So then it's like interesting. You give them the GHB, which is a depressant, to try and like control. Like
wean them off it. Yeah.
Decrease the excitation like so neurologically so without alcohol. So it's like another way to think, okay, like it's a depressant. And the reason it's used for alcoholism is because when you're actually trying to get off alcohol, your body is overexcited. That's like something that I think a lot of people realize is like you've messed up your central nervous system so much that you can't stop yourself from shaking. Wow. Which I think is valuable to know. Like alcohol's crazy. Yeah. Alcohol's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. You can have really intense addictions.
Want a Negroni?
Oh, it is Friday.
Like sure. That is exactly humans in a nutshell. Like knowing so much and then being like, let's have a Negroni.
This whole episode being like, and truly alcohol is probably worse.
Yeah.
And then being like, let's go have some drinks.
Alcohol is so bad.
It is. Weirdly, my one little last fact is some users of GHB include bodybuilders who believe the drug can help reduce fat and build muscle.
Oh.
Because GHB stimulates human growth hormone. Isn't that weird? I didn't know that. Imagine like working out and being like, maybe it's like I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. I'm not part of this community.
Like a performance enhancing drug.
Yeah.
Wow. Like
probably at low enough doses that you're not mentally feeling like you're going to fall over. But thought that was interesting.
Like almost like a steroid vibe, like to grow your muscles. Intense. Like at that point, I'm like, okay, what do? Steroids or GHB?
It's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I found it fascinating. I think it's more something we have to think about as like gay men. I do hear it like talked about
more often.
Yeah. But it's something that
I've never known. I've never seen anyone in front of me take it.
But that's the thing. It's like how... Like a discreet drug. Right? It's such a discreet drug. Like, it's like so easily consumed.
I just feel like there's lots of other drugs that are very... There's some discreet drugs, obviously. But at parties, like, there are other drugs that are not so discreet that I'm curious if I will see it in my life.
Yeah.
Now that the pandemic's over.
Yeah, seriously.
But I feel like drugs always get hidden from me because everyone knows, like, I'm not going to do them. And I was like, wait, everyone did drugs? When?
Yeah,
like, you're at my house.
Is such a weird thing about... drugs is the weird social, like, I'm of the mind that like you should just be doing them in the open at a party because it's like what that creates some of the barriers and the weird like secrecy that makes it more like an ominous thing. Yeah, it's like No, like if you're gonna do a drug, you should do it out in the open so people can also understand like where you're at. Like, do you know what I mean? I've always thought it's interesting when people like hide it, but you're right, it's maybe because people are worried about the judgment.
Yeah.
So it's like almost like, is there a way that you can create a space to be like, this is a safe space, do what you want.
I'm just like, but so shocked, like I know I've been around people when they're like obviously high on coke or whatever, and I'm just like, but I have actually never seen our friends do it.
Well, that is probably like, have like you physically ever said like something to them like, so I was raised to think marijuana was the devil. So if I ever see cocaine, I'm
curious, like, you know, curious mind, like I'd be curious to watch.
Well, cocaine's the drug I was thinking about. It's like it's like sadly very common in like affluent like queer circles, which is so funny because it feels like social justice, and then they like do coke. But like, it is the drug that people do in the bathroom because there's shame around it. And then, but people still want to do it. So it's not surprising to me that like, it's so funny. Like we don't see it, but then you're right. You're just like, the person's like clearly.
I have
drugs.
A pretty visceral fear of like snorting things up nose. Yeah. Even water. Like when I'm swimming, if I get it out my nose, I'm like, ah. So maybe I don't want to see it.
That's why this is also to me more scary, because it's like there's a huge barrier, I think, to snorting something into your goddamn brain. Like that's versus so just, intense. Like you have to sort of like really make that decision. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is kind of like, you could see yourself having a couple drinks and being like, oh, put that little bit of salt in my drink and I won't have to like...
It's freaky to me.
Oh, that is. Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, I'm like, well, that's way easier.
No, it is easier, but I just got scared because we just talked about all the bad things.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
It's just like a drop, you know? Yeah. Like, oh, that scares me. I'm scared of everything. I'm scared of everything.
You're not scared of everything.
Well, most things I'm scared of at first.
Yeah, that's fair. That's good. That's good. That's why you don't like, you know, walk into traffic or whatever.
Everyone should be afraid of getting hit by vehicles.
That's true. Pretty reasonable. It does kill like more people than GHB. That's for sure.
Anyway.
Cool.
That was our lessons on GHB. Hopefully it was educational.
Yeah. You subscribe and leave comments on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
People reached out about this one, actually. That's where this came from. From people reaching out, being like, you should do a side note about GHB. And then I clicked on their profiles and they were muscular gay men. Okay.
So probably bodybuilders.
Like truly one of them was. I'm curious. There was three comments and one of them was like, if you're listening, like, you're a gorgeous man. He was like unbelievably hot and a bodybuilder. And I think gay, but like hopefully I didn't out him. Well, no, I didn't say his name.
If you go through our followers, you might find him.
Yeah. Oh, stop.
There's a lot to go through.
Okay, fair. Whoa, okay. Greg. There's a lot of followers.
Yeah, you want to go through 600,000 followers?
Whoa!
You want to go on TikTok? A million. You want to go on YouTube? 10 million, okay? We've got the followers to back it up.
Okay, well, end on that.
We don't... No, never mind. Okay, we gotta go. Okay, thanks for listening.
Post.
Talk to you guys next time.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.